Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, hosted by Beth Burschak, with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at retiresecure.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
We are talking smart money. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm Beth Burschak, along with Jim Lang, CPA attorney, best-selling author of two editions of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. And we have a special guest in the studio with us tonight. We are doing year-end tax strategies, getting prepared for 2010. And we have Diane Markle with us, who has been working with Jim. Diane, how long have you been working with Jim?
It's been 8 years.
And Diane is a CPA and an MBA, and you specialize in individual taxes.
Correct.
So Diane is going to be helping us through some of this year-end tax strategies. It's hard to believe it's November, and it's time really to be thinking about that already. But I know that Jim wants to start with the hot, hot topic for 2010, which is that there's a tax law change coming up on January 1st. Up until this point, if you wanted to make a Roth IRA conversion, there were income limits. But on January 1st, the income limits go away at this point forever. And it's going to make a huge difference, Jim, for a lot of families. So what should those people be thinking about now?
Well, before we get to 2010, we have to finish out 2009.
Okay.
All right. Now, for most people who were never able to make a Roth IRA conversion because their income was over $100,000, 2010 is going to just be a banner year, and it's going to be a tremendous opportunity. And I actually believe that virtually every IRA and retirement plan owner should have a long-term Roth IRA conversion plan. So the plan might be to convert a number of smaller conversions over every year, say for 5 years or 10 years, or perhaps one large one, or perhaps a big one and a small one, depending on their situation and their tax brackets. But before we get to 2010, we have to talk about 2009, because 2009 is an unprecedented opportunity for many seniors. Many seniors do not have to take, or all seniors do not have to take, a minimum required distribution this year. And the reason that is so significant is because for a lot of people who are age 70 and older, and in the past and in the future, they're going to have to take minimum required distributions, and now this year they don't. The opportunity of a lifetime for them is making a Roth IRA conversion at a low tax rate. So for what most seniors are doing, they're saying, thank you, Uncle Sam. I heard about that I don't have to take a minimum required distribution. I like the idea of not paying taxes now, letting the money accumulate, and then next year and in future years when I have to take a minimum required distribution, I will do so. And what I would like to say to those listeners is wait. This is an opportunity. You're going to be in the lowest tax bracket that you'll ever be in the rest of your life, even if they don't raise taxes, which I think they will. Just the fact that you don't have your minimum required distribution means that your taxes will be lower than ever, meaning your tax bracket will also be lower than ever, meaning that this might be the best year to make a Roth IRA conversion.
Now, we're going to be getting to something in just a minute, Jim, because if you did take that minimum required distribution in 2009, there's a special break. And we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. But let me toss this question out. Is there any talk of extending that into 2010? Has there been any talk at all? Or will it end on December 31st?
As far as we know right now, it will end on December 31st. Whether that will be extended, that will be anybody's guess. I wouldn't even want to say what the chances of that happening are. I think right now, for our purposes, we have to assume that it will come back and how to best plan accordingly.
So we move on to January 1st, 2010, which is when the income limits are off. And Jim is going to be celebrating, I think, on that day all day long. He's been waiting for this day.
literally for 10 years, salivating.
Now, I know that you've been strategizing with the clients that come through the office for this. But if you're just hearing about this and you suddenly realize that income limits are off for Roth IRA conversions in 2010, what should you be doing now for the next couple of months to get ready for that?
Well, one of the strategies that I like is often a series of Roth IRA conversions. And the other thing that I sometimes like is I like to make perhaps different Roth IRA conversions and perhaps reserve the option of undoing or recharacterizing your Roth IRA conversion. And one of the things that you can do to prepare for possible Roth IRA conversions and possible reconversions or recharacterization if the underlying investment goes down is to separate your IRA into several different accounts. I have some people who are separating it into 10 or 20 different accounts. And the idea is that you can make multiple Roth IRA conversions, and then for the ones that do well, you keep those, and then the ones that don't do well, you recharacterize or undo them.
So at this point, that's one of the strategies you could do is separate your accounts.
Yes.
Okay. Now, at your office, you do a lot of analysis in advance. What kind of thing happens in that analysis? Because there's a guy on the staff, Steve, who just is, this is his thing. He's been doing Roth analysis for clients forever, and he gets really in-depth. What are you trying to determine when that analysis is going on?
For a lot of taxpayers, you know, and a lot of times I'll see somebody's list of assets and their tax return, and I will know right off the top of my head, they are a fabulous candidate for a Roth IRA conversion. But what I don't know off the top of my head is how much they should convert and when they should convert. And really, there's, you know, I know there's a lot of software out there, none of which I'm terribly thrilled at. There is no software that I know of that you can just put in a bunch of variables, say optimize, and it tells you how much and when. The real way to do that is, and even using existing software and new software, in fact, we just upgraded, it really comes down to what we call running the numbers. And that's just doing different projections. So let's say, for example, you start with the two extremes. Well, what if you do no Roth IRA conversion? And what if you do the whole thing? And then based on tax bracket, what's going on with people, how much money there is, et cetera, Steve or I will come up with different possibilities. Well, what if we convert $50,000 a year for the next 5 years? What if we convert $200,000 now and then nothing for 2 or 3 years? Well, what if we convert the whole thing, but if the asset goes down at all, to recharacterize certain accounts? So we literally make projections into the future, and based on those projections, we will recommend a typically long-term course of action for a client.
So I want to toss out the office number too, which is 412-521-2732. If this is something you're starting to think about and you think you need really to have an analysis like this, 412-521-2732. The office is in Squirrel Hill. And one thing I do want to point out before we move on from Roth IRAs, Roth IRA conversions, is that this tax law change, which is happening in January 1st, a lot of people seem to be confused on the length of time. Currently, that's a permanent change.
Yes, it is. Now, the way I think about it is the government's going to wake up one day and say, oh my God, what did we do? Because the numbers on it are so compelling. If you, without going into all the assumptions, which would just pour people to tears, but if you make a $100,000 conversion, 20 years from now, you will be $40,000 better off. If you then die and leave the Roth to your kids, they will be $800,000 better off. And if you decide to skip your kids and leave it to your grandkids, they'll be $8.6 million better off. So the numbers are compelling, and it really is a zero-sum game, meaning if they are that much better off, that's how much worse off the IRS is. I am afraid one day the IRS is going to wake up and say, hey, we've been too generous. But what I'm confident is that those of us who have made conversions before they make any changes in the tax law will be grandfathered.
And there'll be a space of time when we would know that would be coming.
Yeah, I don't think they're just going to say, surprise, can't do
we'll
it.
Wake up one Monday, sorry, you can't do it anymore. No, so we'll know. But in the meantime, you should be planning this as part of your overall strategy.
Yeah, I really think that everybody should at least be thinking about it. Now, it's not going to be appropriate for everybody. For example, if you're in a high-income bracket now and you're going to be in a low-income bracket later, it doesn't make sense to do a Roth IRA conversion now. It might make more sense to wait until you perhaps are retired or you'll be in a lower bracket. But for most people, the beginnings of a Roth IRA conversion strategy is going to be very profitable for themselves and their family.
And a few minutes ago, we were talking about the suspension in 2009 of the minimum required distribution for seniors. I want to backtrack on this for a second because there's something new that just happened, and we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet on the Lang Money Hour. And a lot of people missed this whole opportunity. The reason they missed it, I think, was because it didn't really come down until the end of 2008. So some people were not prepared. They weren't paying attention. They took their distributions anyway. But now you have an opportunity to, what would we call it, roll the money back.
I would like to call it put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Because, which usually isn't easy to do.
Because before, once the minimum required distribution or any distribution from an IRA came out, it was out and you couldn't get it back in.
Ever.
Right. So, now there was a 60-day rule but on a distribution, but not for a minimum required distribution. So now, since you don't have to, if people already have, there is a new law that will allow people to actually put it back. And that's a great opportunity if somebody doesn't need to spend the money, because A, it will reduce your taxes, and B, what I'm advocating now is it will lower your income to potentially do a Roth IRA conversion in 2009.
Although you would have to do this quickly because we do have a deadline coming up.
Yeah, it's you have to get it in by November 30th.
November 30th, so that's just a few weeks away. So if you want to strategize about that, you need to think about rolling it back and possibly doing a Roth IRA conversion. So again, you have that opportunity, but the deadline is November 30th. We also have a lot of other deadlines coming up, and I want to bring Diane Markle in on this one. Diane, who has been working with Jim for 8 years. She's a CPA. She's an MBA, doing a lot of individual tax returns.
And one heck of a great tax preparer and a very kind person. And I really mean that sincerely. She's done a fabulous job for us for 8 years, and her clients just speak so highly of her.
Wow, serious accolades, Diane, before we even get to the question.
It's quite sincere.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, well, Diane, we need to talk about some of the deadlines coming up because this seems to be the time of year. Things are, tax breaks are running out, and this is why we're talking about year-end tax planning. But for instance, there's a new car, truck, motorcycle, motorhome deductible, but again, there's a deadline approaching on January 1st, so tell us how that works.
Okay, well, if you purchase, this only applies to new vehicles.
New vehicles. So if you bought a used vehicle, not applicable.
Correct. And you had to purchase it after February 16th of this current year. And this was a way for the government to try to help move the cars because it was such a slow economy. So you are going to be able to deduct the sales tax on the new vehicle, whether you itemize or you don't itemize.
Now, again, that deadline is, the vehicle has to be purchased before January 1st.
Correct.
So you can only, if you have in your mind, gee, I really need a new vehicle, this may be the next couple of months you may want to think about that.
Yes.
Because you can, after January 1st, that deduction is over.
Correct. And there is an upper limit on that also. It's a car that costs up to around $49,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is there an income limit on the, is there an income on your?
Yes.
There is a limit on your income, is there?
I'm sorry. I'm not quite sure on that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, then let's
I believe it is. I believe there is a phase out on that. So for the upper limits, you might be restricted on taking that sales tax deduction.
On the other hand, if you're buying a $20,000 car, you're talking about a $1,400 deduction.
Yeah.
That's not inconsiderable.
No, exactly. So, we also have what is the new home buyer credit, and it was along the same lines, Diane, where they were trying to really kind of jumpstart.
Correct.
Moving homes with the economic situation, but this is about to expire.
Yes, it is.
So, what do you think? Do you think that you can possibly even get in on this right now? Because the deadline is the end of the month.
Unfortunately, I don't think so, because you have to close on the house by the end of the month.
So you can't just have an offer out.
Correct.
There. This has to be closed.
Correct.
Well, if you were really, really fast, if this weekend you ran out and you looked for a house and put an offer on it. But, I have heard talk that there is talk about extending that deadline.
Possibly. I've heard the same talk, but right now there's nothing definite. And currently you can get a 10% tax credit. This is only affects people who have not owned a house for the last 3 years.
Okay.
Okay, so there is some qualifications there. And you can take a tax credit of 10% up to the value of the house of $80,000. So that effectively means like almost an $8,000 credit.
Okay.
And that counts whether you owe the taxes or don't owe the taxes. You would get that money back either way.
Wow.
So it's a great deal.
It is a great deal.
Yes.
But we don't know if it's going to be extended yet. So currently the deadline is the end of the month.
Correct.
All right.
One note I'd like to interject, and it's not really a tax issue, but it is, I think, very germane to a lot of our clients. And I hear a lot of talk about the risk of inflation and pressure on the interest rates and the interest rates on mortgages and fixed obligations going up. And sometimes people say, well, what did I personally do with that? Well, I'll tell you what I did. I actually remortgaged, because right now there's some pretty favorable remortgage rates. And I was able to refinance my house at 4.625. Might be a little bit higher today, but I will just say, in the area of housing, if you're thinking about, gee, what can I be doing now to be thinking long-term taxes, saving money? If you can fix a rate at a fairly reasonable, even a conventional 15-year mortgage, and lose some of the risk of the variable rates, I think that might be something that people should consider.
So even if this home buyer credit is gone, I mean, that's something that you should just be thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, the home buyer credit's great. But it's just on the subject of housing. Probably most listeners here have already owned their home and maybe even had it paid for. But I will say that this is probably one of the best opportunities that I see coming in the next many years for getting very favorable rates.
Well, what do you think about the interest rates? I mean, do you think they're going to zoom up one day out of the blue, or do you think it's going to be a creep up?
I think it's going to be a creep up, but the problem is it's hard to know when to move on, or when to jump on. And I think one of the natural tendencies, well, I'll just kind of wait and see, and then before they know it, it's much higher. And remember, even like 1% makes a tremendous difference in your mm-hmm. in your long-term payments.
Oh, it does. Mm-hmm. Diane, I also want to address the energy incentives, because of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, that amount has changed.
Yes. This is becoming more generous now in 2009. You used to only get a 10% tax credit back on some energy efficient property, and that has been increased to 30%. And in the prior to the new law, there was a maximum of $500 on the credit, and that has been increased to $1,500.
And what kind of things are we talking about?
Energy-efficient furnaces, hot water tanks, insulation, exterior windows. It's a great opportunity to upgrade your home right now.
And this continues through 2010.
It does. And it was not in the law for 2008, which was very confusing to many taxpayers.
So 2009 and 2010. Yes. Well, it may be something then that you did in 2009 and you weren't even aware that there was
a bump in
that credit.
That's right.
So you should just be aware that the bump went from 10% to
30%. Yes.
All right, that's the energy incentive, and that 30% continues into 2010.
Correct.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We are talking about year-end tax strategies. Jim Lang, Diane Markle, we will be back in just a minute. It's the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Thank you for joining us tonight, and we are talking more smart money. We are doing year-end tax strategies for 2009 and getting prepared for 2010. I'm Beth Borshak, along with Jim Lang and Diane Markle, who has been working with Jim for the past 8 years. She is a CPA, MBA, and we were just talking before the break about energy incentives, and Diane, you had mentioned that the credit now has increased from 10% to 30%,
correct,
and that is continuing through 2010. But Jim, you wanted to add something about the whole energy incentive, how to look at it in the big picture.
Well, in the big picture, if you're to believe the literature, many of these improvements will actually pay for themselves. So, for example, an energy-efficient furnace, over time in terms of the reduced heating bills in the near future, supposedly will pay for itself, and I've heard different number of years depending on the product, the price, the size of your home, etc. So if you are going to ultimately have something that is going to help you in the long run and you get a 30% credit on top of that, you could literally come out cash ahead and end up with either better window insulation or a better furnace or whatever the energy saving might be. But what I want to tell people is you have to check with the contractor or the manufacturer to make sure that it is certified to qualify for the credit. Because let's just say, hey, let's get some energy efficient windows, and you get them put in, you put all this money in, and then you want to take a credit and you find out, well, no, that particular brand was not certified. And now you're thinking, oh man, that's going to cost me 30% more than I thought it was. So you want to make sure ahead of time, before you invest the money, and it should be part of your shopping decision, whether it's set of windows or furnace or et cetera, is certified for the credit.
And then what do you need if you're going to try to take this deduction or take this credit? Do you need an actual certificate saying that this is energy efficient, it qualifies for this?
Technically, that's what the IRS would like to see, documentation that it does qualify. You can also go onto the IRS website, and they have some information on the website as to what qualifies. For example, all Energy Star windows supposedly qualify. So, and because this credit is 30% now versus 10%.
You think they'll be a little pickier?
They are. It's more stringent. That's right. It's more stringent requirements.
Okay, so you want to make sure that qualifies, because that would be a shock.
Yes, it would.
You think you're about to get a 30% and then you find out you're getting nothing.
Right. But I would think it would be a selling point. When you go to purchase these supplies, I would use it as a selling point if I were the salesperson, so they should be up on that also.
Sure, especially because this is continuing through 2010.
Correct.
All right,
yes.
So just make sure in advance you do your homework a little bit and make sure that you buy something that qualifies.
If you choose to do that,
if you choose to do mm-hmm. that. All right, I also want to talk about bonus depreciation. And Diane, I'm going to go to you on this one to just explain it. This is the 2009 American Recovery and Reinvestment Act extends the additional first-year depreciation deduction of 50% of the cost of assets purchased through December 31st, 2009. That's a big, long, complex sentence. So can you first break that down and explain exactly what that means?
Yes. In the past, the one depreciation deduction that most of us are familiar with is called Section 179. And that is depreciation where you can write off an asset in the first year without depreciating it over many years.
Just completely write it off.
Correct. Yeah. And to be eligible for the Section 179 deduction, you have to have income to be able to deduct that. But the bonus depreciation is a little different. You can write off an additional 50% of depreciation without having the related income from the business. So you can create a loss by writing off the...
That could be a serious tax
credit
tool.
Correct.
But that is only going on through December 31st. Purchase through December 31st. That is
yes,
that
as
is
far
my
as I know
okay,
right now.
As
yes.
far as you know. And that is a change. I mean, that extra 50% is a change.
Actually, we've had that in the past.
Okay.
Yes.
But what's new is that we can actually create a loss.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why this is going to be relevant for a lot of listeners. I think a lot of people, particularly people who are either unemployed or underemployed, and they are starting their own businesses and they're trying to figure out a way to eke out a living, and they have some startup expenses. You know, they're buying computers and they're buying desks and they're getting set up, and maybe right now they don't have income, and now they're allowed to in effect expense what they used to have to depreciate over 5 years, and they can actually claim a loss, and then when they can use these losses to offset other income on their return, or they can use the losses to lower their income for
here
a Roth
we go,
IRA
for
conversion.
A Roth. Everything always comes back to that, Roth IRA conversion.
A lot of it does, but actually this is a very good opportunity. And a lot of times people who are, let's say, in the early stages of setting up these businesses don't bother taking these deductions until they have income coming in. And that's not necessary.
For this year?
For all years, to me, if you have a legitimate business loss, you should take it. What's unique this year is that you can actually do this bonus depreciation and take a loss due to the bonus depreciation.
Okay, we're talking all about tax planning for year-end tax planning tonight on the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. And Jim, for a minute, I just want to touch on, we're only going to be able to skim the surface on this one. This idea is kind of complex, and we actually once did an entire show on tax loss harvesting. So just if you can just explain what it is and why you should be looking at this for the next couple of months.
Well, what it basically is, it's the offsetting of capital gains and losses on your tax return. So let's say that, you know, you have some stocks that can be sold for a loss, and let's say some that can be sold for a gain. And let's say that you say, well, the smart thing to do this year is to sell the winners. So now you have a capital gain. And if you do nothing other than that, you're going to have to pay capital gains tax. Well, what might be prudent is to say, well, I'm also going to take some of my losses. And that way I'm going to offset my gains and losses. Now, that's just the very simple part. Then, of course, many of us have more losses this year. It might make sense to actually recognize those losses, deduct up to $3,000 in capital losses, and potentially even recognize them and get a capital loss carry forward. And by making a sale, recognizing the loss, we are actually creating a situation where we can have gains in the future that will be offset.
So that's the simple explanation. I'm going to, well, what
sorry
I'm
about that.
It's but okay.
There's so much that can be done with this, and it is routinely not done, and it routinely should be done.
I actually want to guide people to our website for a second, because we did an entire hour on this topic, and we talked to Bob Keebler about this, and he really had some in-depth explanation and how you should look at this. So if you go to www.retiresecure.com and you see the Lang Money Hour, it lets you click on a link that has all of the audio. It really probably would be helpful to listen to that whole show. It's the Bob Keebler Show, and you can get a really good explanation on how this works. But it is definitely something that people should be looking at in the next month or so.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, education expenses is something else that people should be looking at, Diane, in the end here of 2009. And what exactly should they be taking a close look at when we're talking about education expenses?
Okay, well, the good news is the credits are more generous in 2009. And with a very high cost of college, and I know this because I have two children in college.
In the end, it keeps going up.
Yes, yes, yes. So this was well-deserved. So for at least the current tax year, 2009 and 2010, for all 4 years of undergraduate school, you can take up to $2,500 of a tax credit, which is much more valuable than a deduction. So essentially, if a student has $4,000 in one calendar year,
and who doesn't
is correct, then they can take $2,500 of a tax credit.
Now, who is this? The student?
Actually, this is. No, actually, it's on the parents'
tax return.
It's
on the parents' tax return.
Correct.
Okay.
Does it have to be a dependent? Well, I'm getting this blank stare.
I believe it does. I believe it does, yes.
All right. And the other question is, I believe a grandparent cannot take the credit, unfortunately.
No, I don't think so either.
Which is, that's one of my favorite ways to pay for tuition, to have grandma and grandpa pay it directly, because when grandma and grandpa pay tuition directly, it is not deemed a gift. So if grandma and grandpa are interested in helping their grandparents or their grandchildren, they could actually make gifts and on top of that, pay for tuition and pay medical bills. Okay. We'll get to 529 plans later, but I think there's some wonderful things that grandparents can do regarding their grandchildren's education.
Wow. Yeah, we are going to be getting to that in just a minute, but I did want to point out, too, that with this education expense issue, up until now, required course materials like books were not eligible for this.
That's correct.
But this is now included.
Yes, and that was a very much a stickler point in the past. In the past, you could add this to the HOPE credit if the books had to be purchased at the bookstore, and my tax clients and I had gone round and round on this many times. Now the required course materials are also included as part of the cost to be able to obtain the credit. And the other really great news is, if, say for example, your tax liability is $1,000, your total tax liability on your tax return, so you can't technically use the full $2,500 credit.
Okay.
It's for 2009 and 2010, you can actually get part of that credit back, money in your pocket.
Wow.
Like up to 40%. Wow. Isn't that amazing?
Reverse taxation.
Knew?
I love it.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like the earned income credit. You didn't pay anything going in, you get a lot more coming out.
That's
like
huge.
It.
Yes, yes. So for all the parents out there that are paying huge college bills as I am, we need to really pay attention to this.
Okay. Section 529, and Jim, you just mentioned that a moment ago. Are there changes that have happened in 2009, 2010?
There are changes. First, let's talk about the basics with Section 529 plans. 529 plans are a variation of a gift. I've always been a believer in three types of gifts that grandparents can give their family. One is what I call as-needed gifts to their kids. Their kids need some money, whether it be for a car, a down payment, or just to make ends meet. Straightforward gifts, and I'm a big believer in that. The second type of gift I'm a big believer in is Section 529 plans. Section 529 plans are basically money that is being put aside for grandchildren. And the way it works is you make a contribution, you pick a state, and for most purposes, it doesn't really matter that much. for federal taxes, which state you pick. But let's just say, for discussion's sake, that you pick Utah because Vanguard happens to be the investment arm in Utah. So you pick Utah and you pick the set of funds that Vanguard offers in Utah. And let's say you put in $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever you think might be appropriate for your grandchild. And then what happens is that money grows income tax free. And then when the grandchild is old enough to take the money out or is ready for college, then they come to you and say, hey, guess what, Grandma, Grandpa, good news, I got into Berkeley in the computer science division. Tuition is only $300,000 now. And I understand that you have put away a couple dollars for me to pay for the tuition. And then if you think that is appropriate for the child and it's okay with you, then you say okay and you release the money. Now, let's say instead the kid comes to you and says, hey, guess what? I decided to go to the University of the Sun Devil Worshipper. and we climb the mountain and we meditate and everything's going to be great. And
Grandma's not too happy right now.
And we and you say, you know something? That's not really what I had in mind for tuition. And the answer is no. And then the other thing that you can do with it is you could switch it around, not only among grandchildren from the same child, but actually among first cousins. So if one, let's say somebody didn't go to school, or one person's school was more expensive, or one person got a scholarship, or whatever it might be, you can shift it around. So that's a nice feature.
So you don't have to, with these 529 plans, you don't have to name the beneficiary. You don't have to say, this is definitely going to Diane's son. You just establish this fund?
No, you can.
You can.
No, you must establish who it is intended for.
Okay.
But you're allowed to swap.
Okay.
All right. So let's say, for example, that you have two children, and each of your two children have two children. So there's four potential kids that are going to go to college. And let's just say, for discussion's sake, that you fund them all equally. And one kid gets a scholarship and doesn't need any money, and another kid really needs everything. If you want, you can and then let's say one kid doesn't go to college at all, and then somebody else needs some money. You can shift from one first cousin or sibling to another. And that adds great flexibility for the grandparents.
And what if nobody goes to college?
Well, then you could do one of two things. One, you can withdraw the money and pay a 10% penalty on the earnings. And by the way, I've actually done calculations. If you have the money invested for 24 years, the penalty is actually a break-even situation.
Yeah, it doesn't sound so bad.
No, it's not so horrible. Or you can just let the money sit there and use it for the next generation.
And let's get back to the state issue for a second. You said pick a state. What is the purpose of that?
Well, you have to pick an investment, all right? And you can't just go to Vanguard and say, hey, I want a 529 plan. Every state is going to have, I think all the states have one. Maybe Louisiana doesn't. I better watch it.
You know, Jim, people are listening online.
They are listening
in Louisiana as we speak.
There are one or two states that might not have them, but I think most states do. And the states will pick a vendor to offer the investment choices. So there's a few tax breaks if you pick the state that you happen to live in. I know Pennsylvania, I'm much happier with the provider now than I was in the past. But most states will pick this vendor, and it doesn't really matter where the child is going to school or what resident state that the child resides in.
And is there a limit on contributions for 529 plans?
Yeah, it's the regular limit, which is $13,000 per year, without eating into your once-in-a-lifetime exclusion. If you are joined by your spouse, it can be $26,000 per year per beneficiary. And then there's a special rule that will, if you want, you can do 5 years gifting at once. So you could actually give $130,000.
Wow.
So they're really, the limitation is going to be on what you think is appropriate. And I go back to the three-pronged gifting approach. I like three gifts. I like 529 plans, I like as needed, and I like second to die life insurance.
And though we keep saying grandparents, anyone could establish this plan.
Sure, sure. You know, parents are, let's say, very likely to be who have children are, that's probably the best way to save for college for parents. I happen to like it for grandparents too.
Maybe that's because he has a daughter who's probably going to be going to college.
Well,
right?
that I can't say that's not a factor, but it's also, I found that many of my clients are grandparents, and they have a certain work ethic and a certain desire to see value for their money, and they want to see their money going towards certain things. And most of them don't want to see their money going to finance a Ferrari for their grandkids.
Usually not.
Yeah, and it's not really, you know, they've worked hard for the money, and education is something that many of them actually value and prize. And then the idea of being able to do it from a tax-efficient manner is even that much more attractive.
Now, while we're talking about year-end tax planning, I do want to point out there is still time to set up a 401k.
I love 401ks for self-employed people, and for employees, I greatly encourage people to take advantage of 401ks, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, the 401ks have the newer ones have a Roth component in them. So if your employer, so for example, we're a relatively small firm of 10 people, and we have a 401k plan, and our employees get a choice for their contribution of whether it goes into a traditional 401k or a Roth 401k, which has all the advantages of tax-free growth.
And if you don't have a plan established, you have until December 31st to establish that plan. And do you have to fund it by then as well?
No, you can fund it, I believe, by April 15th.
Well, the employee deferral portion has to go in there by December 31st.
Right.
But the employer part can go in after the first of the year.
All right, we will be back with some more year-end tax planning tips and for getting prepared for 2010. It is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Talking smart money and getting ready for year end. We are doing some year end tax planning here. I'm Beth Bershock along with Jim Lang and Diane Markle, who has been working with Jim for the past 8 years, CPA and MBA. We've been covering a lot of issues, so many things to think about here as we're getting ready for 2010. And something that a lot of people have been talking about, Jim, and if you could address this, and this is, we're in this turbulent economic times, and even though technically people say the recession is over, the recovery is going to be long. And one of the big question marks out there is tax rates and what is going to happen, and the idea that tax rates may increase dramatically. And first of all, do you think that's going to happen? And then what can you do about it?
Well, first, there's already legislation that is going to happen that's going to increase tax rates. The tax Bush cuts that President Bush implemented are going to expire after 2010. So we know that even without additional action, taxes are going to go up in 2011. And that has some, and the other thing is, you know, realistically, we are at, interestingly enough, a historic low in terms of tax rates.
Every time you say that, I find it so hard to believe.
Oh, no, that's very true.
I know it's true. I know every CPA on the planet is saying that, but it just seems when you look at your checks that a whole big hunk of money comes out.
Yeah. But I think it's going to get a lot worse. I really do. I fear, particularly at the upper income brackets, substantial increases. So, you know, sometimes the traditional thinking of deferring income as long as you can maybe should be challenged. I'll give you an example. In 2010, you're going to be able to make a Roth IRA conversion, and you're going to have the option of recognizing that income either in 2010 or half in 2011 and half in 2012. Well, naturally, CPAs love to defer paying taxes. And the subtitle of my books is Pay Taxes Later. But particularly for our upper-income tax clients who are, let's say, already in the 35% bracket, I'm going to be very tempted to recognize the income in 2010, and the reason is because for 2010, at least as far as we know now, 35% is going to be the top tax bracket. If you defer it till 2011 and 2012, you might have a 40 or 50% tax bracket.
Oh.
So, and by the way, I remember when taxes were 50%, and it wasn't
that long ago
that it was 70%. So, I think the idea of being aware of future tax rate increases is going to be important, and particularly in the Roth IRA conversion world, that's an immediate example. And I think some of our savvier clients are saying, well, you know, maybe as much as I like deferring it, I like paying less tax even more.
Because what you're saying is if you're at the top bracket and you do a Roth conversion, you pay 35%. Years down the road, that might be 70%. So meantime, you've only paid 35%, and it's been growing tax-free.
And that's right. And earlier when I said that you'd be $40,000 better off and your kids would be $700,000 and your grandkids $8.6 million, that doesn't include the potential for tax increases. So if tax rates go up, then the benefits of Roth IRA conversions are that much greater.
This may sound like an insane question. Can either one of you see an opportunity or a time when it would that would not happen, where tax rates may actually drop?
I would for individuals. So not for everybody, but people can actually plan low tax years. So, for example, 2009 is a low tax year for seniors because they don't have their minimum required distribution. If you are working, and let's say you're at the top of your game and you're making a good salary, and you are not yet 70 and a half, and you plan to retire next year, well, or 2 years from now, those years are going to be much lower tax years for you, even if the tax rates in general are up. So I think there's two things to consider. One is the general tax environment, and two, perhaps more importantly, what is going to be your tax rate, and if you have some idea of what your tax rate is, what should you do about it?
Any other strategies that you would advise or consider with that in mind, that the tax rates may go up dramatically?
Well, I think one thing is that normally we always say defer income, and accelerate expenses. Maybe that's not going to be true for everybody, but what I don't want people to do is to try to generalize and say, oh, gee, tax rates are going up for everybody, therefore I have to reverse what I normally do. I think that you have to get some grasp of where you are and where you will be, let's say, in the future.
You know, Diane and Jim, we have covered a lot of ground. We've covered so many things getting ready for year end and for 2010. Can we do sort of a quick checklist? If you were just an average client and you were coming in to see one of you two, things that, you know, just a quick checklist to kind of recap what people should be looking at here before year end.
I think that what they should be looking at, I mean, I always go to the big issues like, are they contributing the maximum to their retirement plan? Are they doing a Roth IRA conversion? Should they prepare for a Roth IRA conversion by separating accounts? Should they be coming up with a long-term Roth IRA conversion plan and actually a tax plan in general? I think that's, let's say, the big picture. Are they maxing out their 401k? Have they taken advantage of the Roth 401k, or for our university and hospital friends, a Roth 403b? And then all the other things that we had mentioned today, like some of the energy credits and some of the home buying credits and the tax deductions for the cars. I think all those are very great money saving opportunities.
Well, it's a lot to think about. I will say this, that this audio will be posted on www.retiresecure.com, and we also have a link on our websites to some more information concerning all of these issues. So I would definitely take a look at all of that. And Diane, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Diane was a great guest.
Thank you, Jim.
And we do have coming up, and Jim, let's talk about this, because this November workshop is going to be the last workshop for 2009 where we talk about Roth IRAs, Roth IRA conversions for 2010, and the RMD suspension for 2009 for seniors.
This has been the most successful workshop I've ever had, you know, in over 10 years of doing workshops. You know, we're just getting huge results, and people are acting on it, which is really nice. They're coming in to see me afterwards, and we're actually doing things that are going to save people a lot of money.
Well, there is one more opportunity to do that. So I want to you know, give the RSVP. I want to explain what's going on. This is going to be on Saturday, November 21st, and it's going to be at the Four Points by Sheraton in Mars. Actually, we had a great turnout. We were there a little earlier this year. So these workshops are free. There's one from 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning, and there's also one from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. Now, the key is you have to RSVP, because especially since this is going to be the last one for 2009, I have a feeling it's really going to fill up. These have been filling to capacity. So if you would like to attend this workshop, it's 800-748-1571. And Jim, if you could kind of just quickly give an overview on some of the things that you cover. You also cover your estate plan.
I do. I think for a lot of people who are naturally reluctant to go to workshops, you should understand that there's going to be some major education here with Roth IRAs and Roth IRA conversions. It is basically the same workshop that I get paid $10,000 a day to give out of town. And people say, oh, don't you give a much more sophisticated, a much tougher one for advisors? And no, I really provide some real meat. So we go into understanding the basics of IRAs and Roth IRAs and Roth IRA conversions, and then we take a look at the math behind it, and then we try to see which people are good candidates and which are not. And that takes, you know, that's probably an hour or even close to an hour and a half of solid material. We also cover what is, for most IRA and retirement plan owners, the best estate plan on the planet, I believe.
And touch on that one quick second.
Well, that's the one that's been literally all over the press. Jane Bryan Quinn, Kiplinger's, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Financial Planning, all over the place. And it is a very flexible estate plan that defers or puts off all the tough decisions until after a death. So if you have a traditional marriage where you trust your husband or you trust your wife, there is a much better model for estate planning than the one that you probably have right now.
And it honestly works hand in hand with all of the other information you give in the workshop.
And then the combination of Roth IRA conversions and this flexible estate planning, it's a whole lot more money for you and a whole lot more money for your family.
Notice how he phrases that, a whole lot more money for you, a whole lot more money for your family. Actually, it's great information. So again, the next workshop, and it is the final one for 2009. So if you're really interested in Roth IRA conversions and the tax law change that's coming up on January 1st, I strongly recommend that you attend the workshop. Again, space is limited, so you should RSVP. This is Saturday, November 21st at the Four Points by Sheraton in Mars, and it's 800-748-1571. Two other quick things that I want to mention about the workshop. At the end of the workshop, Jim offers free consultations with him, but that's if you're at the workshop and then you sign up at the workshop. And also, everybody that attends gets a free copy of Jim's book, Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later, the second edition. So you get the book, you can read all of the information that Jim has been covering. And again, the workshop is Saturday, November 21st. It's 800-748-1571. And you can also get all of the information and how to RSVP on the website, which is www.retiresecure.com. Thanks again to Diane Markle for joining us today, Year in Tax Planning. Next show, which is coming up on Wednesday, November 18th, this is an interesting twist. We are going to have Pittsburgh City Controller Michael Lamb, and he's going to be talking a lot about city finances and how that's handled, and that's coming up on November 18th. It is the Lang Money Hour. Thank you for joining us, the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at retiresecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at retiresecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.